We have a situation right now where our millennials, some of them are heading into their 30s right now, the oldest of them, and they can't even manage basic adult responsibilities. You know, you and I grew up, you know, we had a lot of freedom and adventure in our lives that millennials weren't afforded. It was a very anesthetized, you know, culture that they were, you know, bubble wrapped culture, so to speak, where they were surveilled every moment. And they were taught a paradigm, they were raised in a paradigm, and therefore they execute the paradigm. So I think what's awesome, Sarah, is I think a lot of people will agree that we have seen a huge shift in the last 20 years in a expansion of consciousness, and there are more and more rebellious voices out here, like you, like me, like Shari Edwards, and there's just, the list goes on and on, who are waking up to this and are saying, no, there's a different way.
With the COVID-19 virus crisis and the number of casualties with the flu, if you have not been looking at C60 as a means to significantly improve your immunities by now, you should be. Here's why. First, a strong and healthy immune system is your body's first defense, and for those with a strong immune system, your body will adequately fight viruses without medical intervention. Second, C60 is safe as long as you are taking high-quality C60 with no added fillers or solvents. Third, C60 is the best means of removing free radicals from your body that exists. It's at least 200 times better at this function than vitamin C and any other antioxidant. Fourth, as Dr. Chu Li stated on a previous show, COVID-19 creates massive amounts of free radicals, which is causing organ failure for those with weaker immune systems. So now it becomes clear you need the best free radical fighter that exists, and that is C60 with black seed oil and curcumin. Why black seed oil and curcumin? Because these two ingredients are the absolute best at supporting C60 to fight viruses and to improve your immune system. Go to sarahwestall.com/shop and learn more about why this formula is so powerful for building your immunities. And it's now available in gel capsules and by diffuser for more serious needs. Be sure to read the research and, of course, use the current coupons to save money when you buy. Patrons also receive a 10% discount. You can find that code at patreon.com/sarahwestall. Remember, keeping you and your family safe is the most important thing you can do.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This is a really great interview I have with Lori A. Couture. She is coming on to the program to talk about kids and our development and the factory school system. But she taught me something during our interview, not that most of my guests teach me something, but it was a new paradigm that is an old paradigm, a new one, but it made me think about what the source of our issue really is. I mean, so many of these kids, especially the millennials and the younger adults in our society, act like children, and they don't want freedom. They want a parent figure. They want socialism so they can have, somebody can control their every, they crave it almost. They want that authority, and it comes all back to the factory system that they've been in since they've been really young. They've been trained to listen to authority. And, you know, she goes through the fact that back in the late 1800s, they specifically created a school, and I think in Massachusetts, so that the workers had more of a factory environment, so they created more workers who were docile and listened and would behave when they were working in mines and do the thing. They weren't just a bunch of free-thinking individuals. They would take orders, do what they're said, and be good little workers. And that's what they created. Is that any different? Now we do it in mass, and now we have all these younger adults who want this authority put on them. They can't think for themselves. They aren't free thinkers. You know, there's always the exception that my dad always used to say, that people make it despite the system. And, you know, those, so there's a lot of those too, but the majority, and we all see it because we call them zombies. And the younger ones are really, you know, entrenched into this thing, and they're just craving this authoritarian socialist environment. And this whole indoctrination of anybody who doesn't think like that is a racist. For God's sake, you know, if you're an independent thinker and want freedom, you're a racist or something. It's crazy. And we're seeing this backwards, no common sense kind of situation, but we've created it. Our society is pumping it out like little factory chickens, and we've got ourselves into this point. And so we talk about, well, what do we do? What do we do now that we're in this society? And so she talks about kind of how we got here, what happens, and then what we should do about it. And we also dive into Big Pharma and how they're kids that don't conform, how Big Pharma is a good tool to be used to make them conform. So we're creating this monster of that we're in, where people are demanding and craving authority figures. So this is a really good, enlightening interview, and I think it's important that we all start to recognize this and we do things differently, because otherwise we're in for literal hell. And we already see it. We're in the middle of it now with this pandemic, where people aren't, there's a good group that's demanding freedom, but there's so many that can't see that so many more are going to die if we don't open this up and take responsibility for yourself, build your immunities, you know, be healthy and get out of this fear. They're creating this fear. So it all kind of ties into how we're seeing people react to it. That's why, you know, I'm going to get the plug a little bit of that antibody test, or why I'm so keen to get that antibody test out there. Not because I'm keen to do some kind of test on the whole pipe. That's the last thing I want, is a test on the whole. Why I like this particular one is it's made in the United States. It's high quality, 98.5% for the antibodies. Doesn't track any metric, any biometric, so it's completely private. They don't even have to report somebody that has the antibody. Somebody who's test positive that symptoms needs to be reported. But because you need to get, they need their, it's their laws, okay? We're in the rules, we gotta follow the rules, which I hate, but that's the way this thing is. Do they have to report it? I don't know, I don't know how they're gonna track that. But that's what their rules state. But you're not going to be tracked, and it's not coming out of China. All that bad media that was coming out about these antibody tests was because they're doing on crappy tests. And I, for one, want to know whether I have this antibody. I want freedom. I want people to realize it's not that bad. We should be fearing this loss of freedom more, because more people are going to die from that than anything else. So that's why I'm really pushing that. And so share that with people. Only businesses and institutions can get it right now. And you have to buy it in sets of 25, but people can do it, and you have to have a license, a doctor to administer it, but it's only 25. So if you have a group that wants to do it, get a licensed administrator, and somebody has a sole proprietor business that can buy it. It's great. So it's COVID-19 at sarahwestall.com. Really believe in it, because I think it'll help end the fear. And I want to also tell you to sign up for my newsletter. The censorship is going crazy. The censorship is off the charts. I have great people. All these amazing people are coming out of the woodwork saying, wait a minute, I want to talk. You know, I just had a world-renowned cardiologist on the show. I mean, I'm having great scientists on the show. And they're all coming out and saying, okay, I'm ready to talk. Lori today is coming out. She doesn't usually talk like this. She's coming out and saying, I'm ready to, and she has some more in the future she's gonna be ready to talk about. So it's important that everyday people, they're coming out and saying, okay, I have the courage now. I have the courage to share what I know, because I know something's not right here and we need to fight together. But if you're stuck in the matrix, fine. But we, the ones who aren't, we got to create something better. We do. We got to create something better for our grandchildren and for our children. So please sign up for my newsletter. You got to get around this censorship. Go to sarahwestall.com and a thing pops up. It's on the side. It's on the bottom. Sign up for my newsletter. You will be notified. So let's get into this really timely and important interview with Lori A. Couture. Hi, Lori. Thank you so much for joining the program today.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on your program. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, you're one of the experts, absolute experts in this area. And actually, when it comes to children and actually care about their welfare, and has been, you've been in the inside, but you say that there is a bigger issue, and it's almost like the whole system's against them. Can you talk about, from a big picture level, what is going on with our kids?
Well, we have a society set up, and we have for centuries actually, that is not in alignment with children's developmental needs. And so the system itself that we have leads to developmental trauma. And then in industrialized societies, to deal with the alarm signals of that developmental trauma, parents feel compelled to put their children in different systems, such as the mental health system, to try to extinguish the behaviors, which are really alarm signals, rather than get at the root of the problem. Now, the parents, they don't know any better. They're well-meaning because they've grown up with the same developmental traumas. But the systems in place that are supposed to help children and families, like the education system, the mental health system, the social services, and the medical fields, all they do is symptom suppression. They don't get at the root of developmental trauma in its many facets. For example, one of the primary ways that children are traumatized is right at birth with attachment disruption. There are multiple things that happen in our culture that lead to attachment disruption in children and parents right from the start. In the medical field. And then those layers just keep building because our society does not support secure parent-child attachment. In fact, it's set up so that it's the complete opposite. And then when we put kids in the school system, they're already wounded, they all have attachment disruption, and magnifies the problem. So when we're looking at the big picture, we're looking at something that has started with the dawn of agriculture. Actually, if you read James DeMayo, James Prescott, Ashley Montague, if you read some of these authors who have been studying this, even going back as far as Margaret Mead in the 1930s, this is an issue that's been going on since the dawn of agriculture, but has been absolutely worsened and just deepened, the trauma deepened with the rise of industrialization.
Well, and you're saying that it's not just the kids that are abused and neglected and trafficked, which are a problem, but you're also saying it's everyone. I mean, anybody that's not homeschooled and not taken care of, where a parent just really cares about their development, you're saying just the whole system creates trauma on all of us and messes us up. It almost gets back to the fact that we lose our creativity, we lose our, I mean, all these things are lost in this process. And I mean, is that what you're getting at? Is just the whole system is like flawed?
Absolutely, Sarah. That's exactly what I'm getting at. I'm saying that the system that children are born into today, if they are born in an industrialized culture, they are born into trauma. The pregnancy is often traumatic because mothers are not supported in staying home during that. When boys are born, they're immediately held down against their will and they are skinned alive with something that we call circumcision. It's really male genital mutilation. And then breastfeeding is immediately interrupted with that. Parents, they may breastfeed for a few months or possibly up to 1 year. But in peaceful tribal societies, hunter-gatherer societies, breastfeeding went on anywhere from 4 to 6 years of age. So our children are not getting even a fraction of the skin-to-skin emotional nurturance that they need. So you have issues like that. And then you have lack of, you know, holding and cuddling and rocking, because a lot of times parents have to go right back to work. And so these children are ending up in daycare when they're every single developmental need is screaming for the in-arms experience. And so then by the time the child is quote-unquote school age, as if that's a biological process, and then that child is then sent off, that trauma is now magnified because now you have another level of the parent-child, you know, attachment disruption. So this is something that's been studied since the 30s. when there are no longer any hunter-gatherer cultures in the world that have not been tainted by civilized societies. However, when those cultures were studied and they were documented very well, even as far back as the 1600s, some of the hunter-gatherer Native American cultures were well documented, that these parents were not punitive. They did not use punishment. They did not use force. Their children were constantly, you know, at the first year of life, constantly on the skin, breastfeeding until weaning, co-sleeping. Children were not pushed out of the nest. They were allowed to develop at their own pace. Adolescents were not forced out of the nest at a certain age, nor were they forced to do adult tasks. But at the same time, when they became adults, they were fully adults. We have a situation right now where our millennials, some of them are heading into their 30s right now, the oldest of them, and they can't even manage basic adult responsibilities.
I would agree with that. Yes, we have a major issue with a lot of our adults just simply not being adults. And absolutely. Do you see that as why they look to the government to be their provider almost? They need a parent figure. They don't know how to be
That's
adults.
Right. And when it comes to the millennials, most millennials were raised by television sets, by computers, by screens, because their parents were working. So millennials grew up without that same sense that, you know, you and I grew up, you know, we had a lot of freedom and adventure in our lives that millennials weren't afforded. It was a very anesthetized, you know, culture that they were, you know, bubble wrapped culture, so to speak, where they were surveilled every moment. And so they were never able to grow up taking risks, you know. And then on top of that, although maybe parenting was less violent than in previous generations, parenting was much more obtrusive and almost suffocating, to the point where, you know, you have these situations where you hear about these cases where college kids, their parents are calling their college professor saying, you can't give my kid that grade, or, you know, they are calling their child's first bosses and saying, you need to pay my kid more. Things that were unprecedented in previous generations, like a parent would never do that.
Oh, exactly.
So you have this odd sort of dichotomy. On one hand, the millennials, they have been surveilled and suffocated. On the other hand, they didn't receive enough developmental attachment security with their parents. So not enough skin-to-skin emotional nurturance. So on one hand, they didn't get enough parenting. And on the other hand, they were helicoptered, so to speak. So
their brains are almost set up to want, you know, I'm going to get into socialism and stuff, because I get so frustrated that the people just are not adults. You know, even this lockdown with this virus, it's like, why are we, can't we have freedom and be responsible for ourselves? And they want to force and to control everybody and everything. The whole notion of freedom is being lost in our country. And it's developmentally. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I had read a poll recently that 60% of millennials, it's around 60 to 70% of millennials actually support socialism, which is really scary because we're not supposed to live in a socialistic environment right now. Yes, the idea of helping others is great, but I think what it is, yes, they are searching for that parent figure that never has been there except as a surveilling. And of course, we're not talking about individuals. There are individual millennials that I know who are extremely self-sufficient, but we're talking about a cohort here. You know, so we're not talking about individuals, we're talking about a cohort, because in every generation, you're gonna have individuals that do not meet that generation's cohort, the sort of typical, but as a cohort, it is a very scary situation that you have young people that are in their early 30s, heading towards 30, and they have not launched yet as adults.
they're emotionally just completely, there's children still. And that's what I see a lot of that behavior. My dad always used to say there is always people that make it despite the system, you know. And so those are the exceptions that you're talking about. And
of course.
Yeah. But yes, because that's what I'm seeing. And I just don't understand the child behavior that we're all witnessing. We're all being treated like children. And, you know, socialism is like that children parent, but it's also one step further than people don't realize. It's kind of a dictatorship from above, and they don't realize that. Why? I mean, you're saying there's a lot more to this. There's, you know, we have the regular child has this problem. We get into this horrific. I mean, I remember in my high school, I just felt like it was so not right for me. I was so stifled. I thrived once I got out of there. And so many people are like that. I was just desperate to get out of there. But so many people are abused in that system. There's very few that come out thinking that high school was a good experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I think children are abused from preschool on. I have worked in every facet of the school system because as a mental health counselor, I've gone in and I've had to actually work in the system to work directly with the kids and work with the teachers. And there's evidence of direct, now we're talking actual child abuse at all levels. And yes, that's horrific. And that is an issue. However, the just the typical behavior that wouldn't rise to the legal degree of child abuse is also abusive to the young person's ability to develop as a free-thinking individual. You know, it's a situation where I think in our generation, we were desperate to get out of that situation because we craved more freedom. A lot of times millennials, and even I'm seeing that with some of the, you know, the younger kids, the Gen Z kids, they are actually craving the surveillance. They want the security of being told what to do because it's too scary to have to jump out into the void and sow their own wild oats, so to speak. And that's what's terrifying to me is that that's the system that we're creating for our kids, is that they are taught from the moment they go to daycare or preschool or school that you shut what we tell you to do. And if you don't, then there is some sort of punishment, whether that's a bad grade or whether it's a call home to your parents or a detention or whatever it is, or social sort of consequences. So there's always a consequence.
I was going to say, this is an incredible interview in the sense that it's a paradigm that I hadn't thought of before, of not just because I haven't thought, but, you know, it's just not out there, of people realizing we're creating this thirst for surveillance and not being free. And do you think it's on purpose? I mean, is this a system that's been put in place on purpose, or are we just stupid? I mean, I shouldn't say, I got to stop using the word stupid. Everyone's telling me I got to stop. In my own family telling me, not my listeners, although the listeners should be telling me that. It just seems like we are doing it unconsciously, or is it planned?
Well, you know, Sarah, I think that there's a lot of pieces to it. I think that there are absolutely forces in place. We can call them many different things, but they know exactly what's going on. But the majority of people, parents, a lot of the teachers, they are not trying to harm people. They are doing what they think is the best for children, but they are not aware of the system that they themselves, because they were also victims of the same system. So it's not like parents and teachers wake up and say, I want to make kids' lives miserable today, or therapists or doctors. It's that they were taught a paradigm, they were raised in a paradigm, and therefore they execute the paradigm. So it takes somebody like, say, John Taylor Gatto, who was a New York school high school teacher who used to sneak his children out of the class so that they could go out in the community and do real projects, and then he'd sneak them back into the class. He later had to break with the school system, and he became a real strong proponent of homeschooling, and he wrote multiple books. it takes somebody like that who decides to pull the curtain aside and say, there's got to be more here. There's got to be more to this. And those are the people that I call the gems, the gem teachers, the gem therapists, the gem social workers that actually say, I need to do, this is not working. Sarah, one of the things that put the light on for me was back in 1997, I had started out working with children in early childhood education, and I noticed that no matter what, no matter how much, how caring and kind the parents were, these toddlers that were coming into the classroom were tantruming, they were hitting, they were angry, and these were babies. They were 2.5, 3 years old. And I kept saying, human nature is not inherently angry or violent. So why is it that these toddlers are committing acts of violence constantly? And that was what led me to start uncovering and learning and going way beyond what I was taught in college and then later grad school. And then later, you know, all the other things you're taught when you do research, but to do your own independent research. And that's when I started looking into basically going back to the start. What did our hunter-gatherer ancestors do before there was civilization, before there was agriculture, before there was industrialization? And when you look at that, and you look at our mammal cousins, like the primates, the bonobos, you look at other mammals, we are the only species that takes our babies the second they come out of our bodies and separates them from the mother, cuts a part of the boy's penis off, and then isolates that baby in a crib. And then after that, not nursing them, but then handing them over to a government agency to raise them until they turn 18, and then throwing them out and say, okay, kid, be an adult. There's no other mammal that does that to their babies. Every other mammal species holds that baby close from the moment it comes out of the body, and they nurture, cuddle, nuzzle, and grow that child until that child independently leaves on their own. And so we need to take heed and stop seeing ourselves as separate from the animal kingdom. We also have to stop looking at ourselves as digital. We may be able to create these digital wonders like what we're using right now to communicate, but we ourselves, we are not digital. We have not evolved any more than the hunter-gatherers have. Our bodies and our physical needs when we come into the world, our emotional, developmental needs are the exact same now as they were 5,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, a million years ago.
Well, and we are learning the science behind the fact that we're energy and frequency and stuff, but that's totally different than trying to digitize our brain and putting us and thinking that we are separate beings aside. I'm totally with you, 100% with you on that. And that's where people, that gets to the point of kind of the general theme of everything we're saying is that they're missing the point. They're looking at it from such a myopic standpoint. I also want to talk to you about our pharma, big pharma, and what they're doing to these children when it comes to drugs, because they're giving these children, it's illegal. They're giving it to them anyways. And they don't care. Can you talk about that? Because you've seen that personally from the inside and what that's doing to these children. But can you first talk about what, how many kids are getting this and why are they not? I mean, what is going on?
So basically what I would see is that the mental health system, especially community mental health, is very dependent. We have to back up to understand big pharma with children. They are very dependent and intertwined with the desires of the school system, the public school system. So in the public school, you take a kindergartner or first grade boy who cannot tolerate a sedentary learning environment. He's expected to sit in a chair or sit still or sit in circle time or whatever it is and either do paperwork or do computer work. He's expected not to run around, not to scream, not to jump and flop his body around. There are certainly very kinesthetic girls too, but boys just developmentally are their kinesthetic learning is their primary way of being. Most children, that is the case. And so what happens is you have a teacher that has sometimes, you know, in some of the cities I've worked to, have up to 30 children in a classroom. So you can have anywhere from 5 to 30 children in a classroom. So the more children that teacher has, the more she's expected to do, you know, have one setup for every single child, and every child has to conform to that setup. And if they don't, it makes the day very difficult. So if you have one child that is, you know, or a few children or most of the boys who cannot sit still and conform to that situation, then it's so much easier to make a referral to the local community mental health center and say, we think this child should be tested for ADHD or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and therefore medicated. And now teachers are not legally allowed to diagnose or recommend medication, but Sarah, they do it all the time.
I'm sure,
Then we would get the referral at the mental health clinic, and then basically the therapist's job is to sit down, write down the symptoms, and then either, you know, sometimes refer out for more testing, but a lot of times they just send them for a med referral, and then the psychiatrist almost reflexively, at least in the state that I was working with, reflexively writes a script out for a stimulant or for something like the new generation of drugs like Adderall and Strattera. There are all kinds of new drugs that they are using for this fraudulent diagnosis, ADHD. So then what happens is the child then becomes extremely subdued and obedient. And therefore, they believe that they have now treated an illness. When in actuality, you have basically blunted the child's affect and ambition and caused them to have an obsessive focus on whatever it is, that busy work that they're expected to do. Then over time, the child starts to become depressed or anxious. They start having anxiety symptoms. So then they bring them back to the psychiatrist or back to the therapist. And then, well, let's try an SSRI for the depression or the anxiety. So you put the child on that for a while. Then what happens is they start having mood instability. And before you know it, they're starting to actually have mood instability that can border on either, that'll go on, you know, sometimes it'll go down the direction of aggression and violence or the direction of psychotic symptoms or ideation. And so then they will put them on a mood stabilizer on top of that. And before you know it, the child's on 3, 4, sometimes up to 8 different drugs because they couldn't sit still in school and they didn't want to do what the teacher's saying. They were not compliant. So I had a completely different approach. Most therapists, their job, they thought, was to get that child through whatever means necessary, whether it was drugs, whether it was behavior charts, token charts, or getting all these other services in place to teach the parents to enforce homework rules or this or that. And basically the approach was get the kid into compliance with the systems that they are in, whether those systems are the home system, the school system, the social, if the child's in foster care, in compliance with the foster home and the social services. And then I've also worked in juvenile justice, get them in alignment with the probation officer. So the whole point is get the kid to do what the adult's saying rather than what are these child's unmet needs.